The 96th Annual Academy Awards is set to air on Sunday night. And behind the scenes of the bright lights, golden statues, and celebrities in couture fashion walking the red carpet, there is, of course, a lawyer making sure it all goes to plan. And for 33 years, that job belonged to Quinn Emanuel founding partner John Quinn, who served as general counsel to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and whose firm still serves as the organization's primary outside counsel. He joins us now to talk about all that that job entails and what it's like being the top legal advisor behind Hollywood's biggest night. Welcome to the show, John.
Alex, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is as good a place as any to start, John. You are the primary outside counsel for the Academy right now, and you were general counsel for many years. And I would imagine that people are just generally curious to know what that job actually consists of. And I suspect it changes with the flow of the calendar. We're probably in quite a busy time right now, I would imagine. But just on like on a day-to-day basis, working for this organization, what does that work look like?
Well, when I was general counsel, I there'd be days where there wouldn't be something that would pop up from the Academy. But, you know, the Academy is an organization of several hundred employees. You know, they have a headquarters in Los Angeles. They have other facilities at different locations in the world. They run various institutions, a library, support various funding programs and student film awards. And in addition, they put on a show once a year, which is watched by over a billion people. So there's all the different things that might come from that type of operation, whether it's human resources, employment issues, issues relating to gifts to the Academy, bequests to the Academy, intellectual property issues. You know, the Oscar statuette is both a three-dimensional statue, is a copyrighted work of art. The silhouette is a trademark. The word Academy Awards plural, Oscar plurals are all trademarks. And most registered as such in most countries around the world. You know, you put on a show like the Oscars, you need waivers from unions. There's all kinds of contracts to review with facilities and providers and vendors. There's an overarching, very, very important contract with the television network, ABC, that gets renegotiated every few years. So there's all the different kinds of business issues and the related legal issues that you would expect would come up with a organization with those kinds of operations.
You mentioned IP. I was going to get to that later, but you went into some detail there. So I'll just jump to there now, and then we can go back to questions about the broadcast, which I think most people are interested in. But since you brought up IP, you are one of the, even in your non-Oscars work, you're one of the most prominent IP litigators in the field. I'm curious to know more about the Academy's IP interests. You mentioned that there are valuable trademarks that they have, but I'm curious to know, like, how resources are allotted to protect them. I mean, you could walk in and to any store on Hollywood Boulevard and buy a knockoff Oscar right now, but I don't suspect every sort of single instance is, a point for litigation or enforcement for the body. But
no, I hope that's not true. We're not doing our job if that's true. You know, there are certain parameters. The Academy does not claim ownership of every golden male standing figure trophy, which says best dad or whatever. You know, they do have certain standards about what is regarded as confusingly similar. You know, the Academy has had a policy of not being quick to bring litigation. They send out a lot of letters, cease and desist letters, to people who may not know about the Academy's copyright and trademark rights. So, I mean, but that is an ongoing amount of activity, and online as well. The use of those marks and copyright material has to be policed.
I want to talk a lot about where we are at sort of in the calendar right now and the preceding couple of months. You know, you mentioned at the outset here that probably many weeks and months might go by where you don't have any work to do for the Academy or nothing too substantive. But I would imagine that changes a lot during awards season. I mean, what are the things at the top of the list around that time?
Well, there's everything relating to the show. There's a review of contracts. There's all kinds of vendors, as you can imagine, who provide various types of services or products relating to the show. And rarely, it hasn't happened in the recent past, there'll actually be disputes that arise out of the nominations. You know, there was an instance where you know, they found out that it was some Latin American country that was Uruguay or Paraguay or one of those countries, I apologize, I just can't remember, was nominated for Best Foreign Language Film as a film from that country. And then it turned out, it came apparent that it really, you know, under the applicable criteria, it really didn't qualify under that country. And so it was disqualified. A claim was brought relating to that disqualification. There have been claims brought relating to credits, whether somebody was a producer or wasn't a producer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, over the years, there have been some claims arising out of the nominations and people who felt like they should have been nominated or were nominated and then disqualified.
Yeah, I had questions about a lot of the criteria. I know it cuts across a lot of different areas depending on what categories you're talking about. But I did also want to talk a little bit. There's been a lot of discussion, especially over the past year, about the Academy's rules for, I want to even be careful with the verbiage here because I know some of it's a little loaded, but like, you know, for lack of a better word, campaigning for either awards or nominations or lobbying for awards or nominations. And that even just as recently as a year ago, there were lots of changes made to like what the rules are about all of that, the sort of game within the game there. And I don't want to get too lost in the weeds about the specific rule changes because there are a lot of them. But if from a legal angle, I'm curious to know just sort of what the goals are of these rules about, like, everyone understands that there's some like level of campaigning that goes on, but what is the goal of the organization in terms of policing that?
Well, I think that the idea, it comes back to the notion that it shouldn't just be a mercenary activity. It shouldn't be, the Oscar shouldn't go to whoever can spend the most money and try to use influence with voters and members of the, you know, the Academy and the Board of Governors, that it should be in some sense kind of a civilized or dignified process and not, you know, it's not commercialized. I mean, that may sound ironic to you about talking about the Academy Awards not being commercialized, but there is a real belief at the Academy that the Academy Awards are to recognize achievements in an art, i.e. film, all the different aspects of film. And that really is what it should be about. So,
yeah, I understand the distinction you made. It does sound a little funny saying how you don't want it to be commercialized, but I know what you're saying. I mean, it's a commercial sort of product. It's a public broadcast, but you're talking about the doling out of the honors themselves. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's about recognizing the Academy Awards, in the bylaws, it's the recognition for their achievement awards. It's for the recognition of achievements in film, the art of film. And that really is the goal here. Now, of course, obviously it has implications for business and money and box office and all, and people's careers and all the rest of that. But the Academy is very concerned that sight not be lost to the fact that this is about recognizing art, and it's not, you know, it's not just simply about the money and the commercial implications of the awards.
I had a similar question about the structure of the awards themselves. There's been a lot of discussion about the addition of new categories, for example, and just recently the Academy announced that it would be adding a new award for achievements for casting in motion pictures. And there's always pushes for more. There's also been in the past, a collapsing of categories. There used to be two categories for sound design and sound editing, and now that just goes under one umbrella category. I just want to know what legal's role is when the Academy either collapses categories or adds new categories. I want to know, does that come across your desk, and what role do you play in that process, if at all?
I mean, not really. We'll see the language, and maybe we'll have some suggestions as to the language, but that's not really viewed as a legal issue. Those determinations are made by the branches and the Board of Governors, and it's really not, those aren't the products of legal analysis or legal input, really.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. I was always curious to know sort of whether and to what extent you played a role, but I don't mean to force it if it's not there. The other thing, and I want to talk about the broadcast itself, where as we're talking now, we're just under 2 weeks from the broadcast. You know, when Jane and John movie lover tunes in. They're there to see who's winning the awards, who's, celebrities interacting with each other, things like that. When you watch the awards, I mean, do you look at it from like a, I don't know what your sort of mindset is. Are you like on the alert for something that's going to come across your desk on Monday morning? Or are you like nervous, or are you just like a regular viewer like everybody else? I'm curious as to your mindset when you're watching the broadcast.
I think I'm just I'm trying to enjoy it. You know, there have been, I used to take a copy of the ABC contract with me because the previous general counsel had told me, I mean, Reagan was shot on the day, Ronald Reagan, President Reagan was shot on the day of the Oscars or the day before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was kind of the potential contractual issue as to whether there was a thought about whether the Academy should cancel the show or whether ABC should cancel the show and what the repercussions might be depending upon who took action. It was different under the contract. It did have some legal consequences. And after he told me that story, and I used to always take the ABC contract with me and have it in my tuxedo pocket. I don't know why, just because something came up, I never had to look at it, but I at least thought about that because the previous general counsel had told me that had been an issue. And then, of course, we have the famous episode where, you know, Will Smith took a punch at the I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry.
It was Chris Rock who was presenting an award. Yes,
presenting an award. You know, that's the sort of thing you're looking for.
I had questions about that specifically, if you care to recount them. I know you've given other interviews on this point, but I wouldn't mind rehashing it with you. Were you at the ceremony that evening when that happened?
You know, I actually wasn't there that night.
Okay.
I was not there that night.
Well, regardless, when that happened, I remember I was watching it. It took me a few minutes to ascertain whether this was like staged or part of the bits that were going on. It, of course, wasn't. Can you talk about the fallout? Because that is kind of one of the most notorious things to happen, certainly in the last dozen years or so there. What was that like?
And, well, I mean, a lot of opinions were expressed about how that was handled that night. And obviously there was the Academy, and Will Smith was a member of the Academy. And one of the things that was front and center was whether and what disciplinary action should be taken vis-a-vis Will Smith. And the Academy was sensitive to not acting precipitously or inappropriately, dealing with it in a proper due process way. And actually, we were engaged to undertake, believe it or not, an investigation about what happened, which may seem a little curious since there's like a billion people who saw live what happened. But fortunately, Will Smith resigned. So we didn't have to do anything. And that became the end of the matter.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was like, because that was such an insane incident. I didn't know if, you know, in legal journalism, we're always talking about lessons lawyers learn from case X or incident Y. And I don't know if that was just so sui generis that it's like, well, we're not putting like armed guards at the base of the stage or anything like that. But it seemed like the decision was sort of made for you just by the resignation of the person in question.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. The other incident that I wanted to talk to you about, and I'm sure you can guess what I'm driving at the 2017 ceremony honoring the movies of 2016, there was the infamous mix-up with the Best Picture winner. It was announced as La La Land. It was later revealed to be Moonlight. And this is related to a different question that I had about voting integrity and all of that. I take it from you were about to interject. Were you in the building for that incident?
I was there that night.
Okay. And similar question before the particulars of what came of it. You know, you're there as, you know, you provide legal advice to this organization and this huge screw up happens. What was your phone blowing up? Were you pulled into meetings or was anyone talking to you or what was your...
Well, my phone did blow up afterwards.
Sure.
But you'll recall somebody came out to, and I forget who the presenters were who were out there at the time.
I believe it was Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway gave the award.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And somebody corrected them. So it was corrected pretty quickly. But obviously, there were a lot of questions being asked afterwards and that night as to what had happened. How could that happen?
Were there, to your knowledge, and again, this kind of gets to my, I don't know how much this stuff crosses your desk, but were there audits done about the process by which the envelopes are delivered? I mean, it was always very closely guarded secret. You know, I know PricewaterhouseCoopers handled the voting for many years. Do they still? They might. I'm not sure. But like, was there any sort of internal stock taking of exactly how it happened and any mitigation? And were you involved in that at all?
I mean, there was investigation done exactly. How could that possibly have happened? It was taken extremely seriously. I mean, basically what happened is the Pricewaterhouse partner who was backstage simply gave the presenters the wrong envelope.
Human error.
I mean, there were duplicates on both sides, you know, Pricewaterhouse partners on either side of the stage who had duplicate sets of the envelopes for the awards. And, you know, the one who gave this set to the presenter gave the wrong envelope. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, like I say, human error. There was no institutional sort of shortcoming.
Right. It wasn't a voting problem. I mean, you referred to voting issues. It was very much a physical backstage problem that the wrong envelope was given to the presenter.
Yeah, I guess I didn't mean to suggest that there were voting issues. I just meant, I guess I should have said, like, you know, the overall administration of the doling out of the awards themselves, not casting votes, but. Very interesting to hear from you being in the building on that occasion. And some other kind of institutional things I wanted to touch on. All of them are a little bit different, but it deals with sort of movements or calls for change within the organization itself. Over the last decade, especially, there have been a lot of campaigns to diversify the voting membership, both in terms of like racial diversity, regional diversity, things like that. And I know the Academy has taken steps to address concerns like that, and it's sort of the central allegation is that it leads to sort of unintentional biases in who gets nominated and who wins and things like that. But I'm once again curious, you know, when the Academy makes a decision to try and improve itself on that front, where do you come in terms of lending assistance or trying to help with that effort?
As it relates to diversification, equity, and inclusion, I mean, that really has not surfaced as a legal issue, per se. I mean, the Academy has done a lot to diversify its membership over the last 5-6 years. And that really came from within the Academy and the membership of the Academy and the leadership of the Academy. But we weren't responding to any sort of legal claims or, you know, sort of discrimination or disparate impact analysis or anything of that nature. It really did come from people who thought that this was an issue that the Academy needed to tackle and do something about.
Do you have an assessment of, and again, I mean, you said it wasn't squarely a legal issue, but I am curious to know your impression of, you know, how you think that process has gone as a, you know, someone who observes the organization quite closely.
I think it's gone really extremely well. I mean, there's a lot of talent and people with different backgrounds who are much more visible and have leadership roles in the Academy. The membership of the Academy has grown. I think there are whole branches of the industry who felt they were underrepresented, who I think probably think that's no longer the case.
When it comes to like what makes it on air at the awards, I'm very curious. As I was preparing for this interview, I saw an interview you did over 10 years ago now. It ran in Reuters, and you talked about the sort of vetting, and you alluded to this at your answer at the top, about the things that will make it to air during the broadcast. And I'm specifically curious, you know, Jimmy Kimmel is hosting this year, for example. He's hosted many times in the past. There was a reference in the interview you gave in Reuters to like sort of screening or editing material from the monologue and like sort of things that will be broadcast. Can you speak more on that? It was kind of just a passing thing in this interview. I want to know more about like, does legal sort of edit Jimmy Kimmel's jokes, or like, is it not so heavy handed? I'm curious to know more about the process.
Well, there isn't. I mean, what you see is live. The monologue is done live.
Of course, yes.
It's not edited. We will see scripts of the whole show in advance, including the monologue. And there have been occasions, very few over the years, where we suggested that it might be a good idea to not to do certain bits that they proposed to do. But I mean, that was very rare.
When you are looking at the scripts, like you say, you get them ahead of time. It is a live event. Someone could say almost anything. And of course, there's like the very slight tape delay, which can save you in live TV. But when you are reviewing those scripts, and I take your point that it's rare that you would ask for something to be excised or whatever. But what are you looking for when you're going over these scripts? I mean, is it about harming business relationships with advertisers or just things that are insensitive or both or all those things? Like what is that process informed by?
The particular instances, there were so many years ago and they've been so rare, I actually can't remember what they were. But you can, as you can imagine, you wouldn't want somebody to say something that somebody might interpret as being a claim as defamatory. You wouldn't want something to be over the top in terms of something that was off color in a way that might be offensive to some people. I mean, I think those are the sorts of things that not just us, not just the legal, we're not the only ones who are reading the script. Anyone, you know, with judgment would, you know, might call out if there was something that raised those kinds of risks.
You mentioned that, you know, it's a, when we were talking about the scripts for the show, you very crucially pointed out to me that it is a live event and that there are things that can happen in live television production that you can't foresee. You know, I asked you about things that the host is going to say and that you've reviewed that. I'm curious about, you know, sort of legal's role in like, whether it's providing security for the event. It's like a hugely watched thing. It could be a platform to for people to make any kind of statement. And that's relating to people who might be like literally not invited and like, you know, getting into the ceremony, but also like it is a place where people sort of make statements, whether they be political statements or any kind of like activism. Now, I know that when people make statements, they make them in their own personal capacities and that the Academy is not like liable because somebody said something on their broadcast. But when it comes to the overall sort of like actions that need to be taken to like exert a measure of control over what happens during this live broadcast with regard to what people say, what does that process look like for you, if at all? Or is it just kind of like, we'll deal with it after the show is over and see if there's anything we need to address?
Well, in terms of security, I mean, we do actually, there's a police substation that's set up there. There used to be people who, I don't know if it's happened in the last couple of years, but people, it would not be uncommon that people would try to sneak in to the show. And we would actually have lawyers from our firm there manning a security desk. Police would make arrests and we would be there to supervise the process from a legal standpoint if somebody was thought to be trying to sneak into the show. You know, they need, obviously the point is, the Academy needs to know who is sitting in every single seat, because right, there is, if somebody wanted to make a statement of any kind, that's a very, very big audience with the live telecast. So there is a lot of security around who gets into the building and gets into the auditorium. In terms of what's said at the, you know, on stage by the presenters or the people who get awards, people have expressed the political opinions sometimes, but I don't think that, you know, there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at.
You know, yeah. I mean, they're up there live and they can make a comment on pretty much anything they want. So you're really at the mercy of the good judgment of the people who are up there at the podium.
The other thing I wanted to ask, and this is not really related to the ceremony itself, this is sort of part of the broader work you do with the organization. Some years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, the Academy opened up the Museum of Motion Pictures, which is sort of a fixed tribute, a museum. It's in the title of the history of the motion picture industry. I can imagine that was quite a feat of marshaling resources. I'm curious to know whether it's actually acquiring real estate for the project or various other contracts. What was that process like for you?
The Academy had talked for years and years and years about having an Academy Museum. People come from all over the world. They come to Los Angeles. They come to Hollywood. They want to see Hollywood. They want to learn about the history of film and the history of film in Hollywood. And they're really, until the Academy built its museum, there was no place to go. There's no place where you could really learn that. And so, I mean, there were a couple of false starts. You know, back 2008, the financial crisis, they were on the verge of doing something, and then they had to pull the plug on it. But, I mean, there was a whole range of things. Money had to be raised for financing. There were tax implications that had to be looked at. There were gifts and bequests. There was a long-term lease deal with both LACMA, you know, that's actually, it's in a building, which is part of LACMA. There had to be a deal done with the city. There are all kinds of permits. There were neighbors to be dealt with. It was a huge construction project. So everything, all the permits, the different constituencies that you have to deal with in getting approval for any project like that, we were involved in all of that.
All right, John, you've been very generous with your time. I did just have a couple of sort of lighter fare for you. As we've already alluded to, you've attended, how many ceremonies have you attended? Do you have the exact figure?
About 30. I think I've attended about 30 shows.
Do you have even apart from your legal work, we went over some of the maybe more notorious incidents, maybe that aren't a point of pride for the organization. But I'm curious to know if you have any, prominent memories you care to share.
Yes. I remember when Rob Lowe performed on the show and Snow White appeared on the show. And that night, my wife was giving birth at the hospital after the show. And I got a call saying Disney had called and sent a nasty gram and saying that was their copyrighted Snow White.
Oh, wow.
And, the Academy needed to issue an apology and agree to do something. And apparently Roy Disney had seen the show and was very, very upset about that. So we spent the next 48 hours working. I think actually Disney did file a complaint the next day against the Academy. But, it was resolved and dismissed within like 48 hours. They reached some kind of agreement.
And you with a new baby on top of all of this.
Yeah, I will just say it was far from clear that Disney was right there. But they did reach an agreement to resolve it, and it never went anywhere.
That's quite a harrowing story, especially given the circumstances there.
Yeah, I got paged in the hospital.
Good Lord. Oh, man. Well, the other thing I wanted to ask, I don't know if you're not a member of the Academy, are you?
I am. I'm actually a member of the Academy.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
Because now I don't know. I don't suspect you'll be able to say so. But and people publish these things all the time. I've always wanted to publish one of these stories. I don't know if you'll be able to. You don't care to share any of your ballot with us?
Actually, I'm a non-voting member.
Oh, you're a non-voting member.
So I'm a member of the Academy, so I can't. I don't have an answer to your question.
Would it be untoward of you to offer predictions? Is that? Are you too close to it?
It seems like the father of the nuclear bomb is going to sweep things. I'm just blanking on the name. Right,
you're talking
now.
About Oppenheimer, is what you're talking
of
about.
Of course,
yes.
I mean, it seems like that's probably going to sweep.
Yeah, I think so too. I actually thought about that. Now, this isn't. We're almost done here, and I'm curious what you think. This isn't really a question for a legal officer, but I follow these awards very closely, and every year, it's not to say you don't get surprises. Surprises do happen, but since you go last, sort of in the rotation of the big award shows, and again, this is not a legal question at all, but since I have you, I thought I'd ask you. There is so much that's like basically indicated before the show starts, and I just wonder if you had any thoughts about, like, there has been talk sometimes of like changing it so that the Oscars actually take place before any of the trade groups go and things like that inform a lot of the voting. Do you think that matters much to people, or do you have any strong takes on that?
I mean, it's a subject that's discussed at the Academy, has been discussed, and the timing and whether the Oscars are really in an optimal place in terms of Oscar season and the calendar and the impact of the earlier awards. I mean, there is issues in the lead up to the Oscars. There is so much that has to happen.
Yeah.
So many films that have to be viewed. You think of all the documentaries, the foreign language films, and all the different films.
All the shorts.
You really do reach a point that it's very hard to do much more with the schedule.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that, actually, just the volume of films.
Yeah, people have expressed concerns from time to time about whether the Academy is getting preempted or whether the results of the earlier shows maybe impact the voting on the Academy show. You know, I think the Academy voters have shown they can be pretty independent, but there really is issues about how much you could shorten or truncate that schedule.
I hadn't considered that, but it's interesting food for thought. Are you going this year? Meant to ask that as well.
No, I'm not going this year.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to ask you to say hi to some people for me, but it's honestly probably for the best. Anyway, John, as I said, you've been quite generous with your time. I'm eager to see the show, and it'll be greatly informed by the discussion we had. Thanks for joining us.
Very good. It's a pleasure, Alex. Thank you.
Thanks, John. We'd like to thank our guest John Quinn for joining us today, our producer Stephen Trader, and our executive producer Amber McKinney. Our music comes from Law 360's own Kelly Marcano. Thanks so much for listening.